my darling Unsilver Revolt followers. BMAC is back at NAMM, and Matt Martinez is with me this time. How you doing, Rabbit?
Doing good. Happy to finally be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And we are here talking to a drummer who's full of colorful, whimsical humor on the stage as well as off the stage. I mean, when you look at him in the photos, he's a ferocious beast, but I'm sure he's a sweetheart at heart. And we're going to find out if he is that and how he's enjoying NAMM and what his plans are. So please help me welcome Nick Mason, the living drummer. How you doing, Nick?
Good. How are you doing?
Well, hey, I'm at NAMM. How do you think I'm feeling?
Overwhelmed, tired, exhausted, irritated, like you want to punch a little kid, maybe. I don't know. That's usually NAMM, right?
No, that's Disneyland.
That's where we are.
Well, across from the street, so yeah.
I saw plenty of people with mouse ears walk through the hotel this morning.
Hey, you came here, I walked by a gift shop where they are selling Mickey Mouse plush toys, so what do you expect, right?
Exactly.
So, Nick, what number is this for you in terms of coming to NAMM?
Actually, I was trying to figure that out recently. I think, and I could be wrong, I think it's 13, maybe more. At least 13, like, years in a row. It's kind of stupid.
I wouldn't call that stupid, but Rabbit, you and I got to start catching up here, man.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I just mean stupid that I keep coming year after year after year after year. And, like, and I still do it every time. I'm like, oh, it's NAMM time. Time to go again.
So, Nick, what made you decide to become a drummer? What inspired you to get behind the kit and just go crazy with it?
That's a loaded question. How long's the battery on this thing?
Well, we got enough for like 5 hours, but let's just keep it to like 20 minutes.
All right, I can try that. So 20-minute story or 20-minute... No, I'm kidding. All right, so my whole family was drummers. My mother, my uncle, my grandfather, a bunch of my cousins, who weren't drummers married drummers. It literally... aunts, uncles, everybody, like on my mom's side of the family, was a drummer. So I grew up in a drumming household where I got my first snare drum when I was 2. And I kind of didn't have a choice in the matter. I mean, I had a choice, but, you know, when they're giving you drums as gifts when you're a toddler, it's a little bit like, here you go, kid, here's your career, you know? I actually rebelled against the family when I was like 9. I was like, I'm going to play an instrument, and I'm going to play the saxophone.
What made you go for the saxophone?
I just wanted something different, and because, like I said, everybody was drummers. My dad's a guitar player, so I kind of grew up in a guitar shop because my dad owns a repair business. Uh-huh. And so I was around drums and guitars and stuff all the time and around rock and roll all the time, and I was like, I just wanted to try something different. But when you're 9 years old, carrying alto sax to school every day is not fun, especially when it like weighs more than you do.
I was a baritone saxophone player.
There you go.
Middle school, so I know the feel.
You had it even worse then.
Oh yeah.
So it wasn't that I didn't enjoy it and I wasn't bad at it, but it was just honestly like carrying it to school every day was a bummer. And
oh, I know that feeling.
Yeah. So I thought I was taking the easy way out with switching up and being able to just throw a pair of drumsticks in my backpack, which was fine until I got to high school, and then I realized that it was no longer just throwing drumsticks in my backpack. It was like, oh, I got this whole drum set thing I got to deal with now, you know, once I started playing in bands and stuff. But that was kind of it. I just kind of caved after a year of saxophone. I was like, you know, maybe I'll just play the drums like everybody else in the family.
Just go in the family business.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
And your nickname, and I actually want to correct myself. I called you the living drummer. You're the living dead drummer.
Yes.
Excuse me.
I missed that, so it's okay.
Can you tell us what made you go into that concept? What is the living dead drummer?
Yeah, that actually came from a NAMM show, believe it or not.
Really?
It did. It came from a NAMM show. That picture, too, that you got in front of you. that's from a NAMM show. That was when I got... That night was when I got the name. So, I think it was 2016. NAMM 2016. Coffin Case... was doing their 20th anniversary party.
Uh-huh.
And Johnny Coffin called me up about a month ahead of time and was like, hey, we're going to do something really big for our anniversary party. I want you to be involved. And I said, great, I'm a drummer. What do you want me to do? You know? So we came up with this idea. He always does, like, he always has the coffin girls, the models out and stuff like that, the alternative models and stuff. And they used to do an annual fashion show. And I'd been coming to it for over a decade, you know, anyway. Used to be here in the Hilton upstairs in one of the ballrooms. And this year it was going to be at the Grove. And it was going to be part of the NAMM Jam. And it was John 5 headlining. And it the opening bands were... Lemmy had just passed away. And he had like this rockabilly band on the side. They were the opening act along with L.A. Guns and Bisto Blanco. And then it was the Coffin Fashion Show. So I got a buddy. And he and I had these stand-up drum sets that we built out of our kits. And we just played the tracks like just classic heavy rock stuff, and we flanked each side of the stage, and the girls did their runway modeling between our drum sets, and they had us all dressed up in these corpse paint outfits, you know, and I was wearing contacts and vampire fangs, and I had all the makeup on, and we looked like we had just crawled out of a grave, and we were sort of like unofficially in the backstage area, just kind of nicknamed like that's where Living Dead Drummer came from. Was like, it was like a nickname backstage for, you know, what they were just calling us for the night. And I was like, man, that is brilliant. And I just took it and ran with, like, the next day. I was like, that's it. Ordering new business cards, changing my website address, changing all my social media over, downloading social media apps I don't even use just to register the name. Like, I just blanketed everything instantly and ran with it. And it's worked out great because it's carved out an identity for myself that's really difficult to do in the music industry. It's being an individual and be able to make an identity for yourself is really hard. And it's twice as hard when you share the name with a dude who's more famous than you and has the same job. Because Pink Floyd's drummer is also named Nick Mason. He's got about 30, 40 years on me. So...
And about 100 million records, too.
And, right, in sales, anyway. And so, yeah, that was a struggle that I always had, was like, you call somebody up and you say, it's Nick Mason on the phone, that's where their head instantly goes, was like, the Pink Floyd dude, and then when I get on the phone, they're like, you're not British, or 60. you know... This actually gave me more of an edge further away from that than I had before, you know?
That's good.
But it's been great, and it married my fondness and love for horror movies and stuff like that with my passion and my career as a drummer. It was able to perfectly blend everything together, and it was cool.
What was the initial fan reaction when you first introduced the Living Dead drummer on that night?
So far, like, it was, everything was positive. Like, everything was super cool. People loved it. And it just, like, it was one of those things where, like, people just said, well, that makes sense. That, they, of course you'd be doing that, you know? And it's been great. And I've gotten a lot of compliments on it since then, too, where people are like, man, That's a great identity, or that's a great name, or something like that, you know? So it's definitely worked, and it's gotten me into some weird circumstances. So, like, last night, I was at the Grove, where the whole thing all started. I was backstage after their event, and I ran into a guitar player I know, and she, like, ran up and gave me a hug, and then she's like, oh my god, I didn't recognize you without the makeup on.
Who was that, exactly?
So... see, now you ask, I'm drawing a blank.
Oh.
Laura Wilde is her name. She's a badass guitar player. And I hadn't seen her in a while. But yeah, that was the first thing. She's like, I almost didn't recognize you without all the makeup on.
So, and it's good that you found yourself a niche inside the music world. Because like you said, it is difficult to find your identity. I mean, for Matt and I, we had to find our own identity when it came to writing and had to find our own style. So that's why he went by Rabbit, because he because he got the name from working at Knott's Berry Farm during Halloween season.
Oh, no way.
Because he would... You mind if I tell this to Matt?
All right, I can tell it.
Yeah, go ahead, Matt. Tell him.
So the sliders at Berry Farm, the first time I ever went sliding, they were jumping over a bar, had no idea what I was doing, flung myself over the bar, and someone went, "He jumps like a rabbit!" Second, third, fourth. Like, what just happened? You just got nicknamed. Okay.
And that's great. So you did the sliding stuff at Knott's? Yeah. That's amazing. I love that stuff.
I did a couple seasons myself, and my nickname was Mantis because I accidentally killed a praying mantis, and I was actually like, oh, no, because I actually like praying mantises. They're like, mantis, mantis, mantis. I'm like, well, it's better than Gerber shits.
No, you know what? It, like, when something sticks or when you get that moment, like, just take it and run with it. You know, that's the best thing to do. I love it.
At BMAC, because my name is Brandon McCarthy, and I decided, everybody keeps out. Some people, when I first started, they were like, Big Mac? I'm like, no.
Like, no.
I do not like the hamburger. I don't eat it. I am not a Big Mac. I just call myself BMAC. I hyphenate it.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be a thing where people would probably go there first, like, oh, like a Big Mac. No.
Well, so it was kind of my rap name in high school, because I was going through a weird rap thing. First I was B Diddy, and then became B Mac. And that just stuck with
me. I'm glad you stuck with B Mac, not Beep Diddy. That one's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, you know what?
It was a little derivative, right?
It was the early 2000s. I was a sophomore in high school. Okay. I was into rap. I was into Eminem. What are you going to do?
I gotcha. So those days.
So you're not only are you you're right now with the Rhythm Coffee.
Yep.
And that's a great group. I saw them last year with Matt, and you guys put on an amazing show.
Thank you.
Do you like help out with the writing of the music or the words, or is that all Johnny's business?
That's Garrick. Garrick, he does all of it. It's he welcomes contribution, but anytime he's got an idea for a new song, he'll just send me a demo, which is usually just like him playing guitar and singing all the parts kind of thing. And then he sends it out to everybody, and the Ghoulie girls get their part. He'll tell them that these are your lines for it. And he does leave it up to me for the drum parts, which is great. Like any existing songs, obviously, I just kind of copied what was already recorded. Yeah. And the band's been around for like 15 years. So I had a lot of material that I just had to learn. But the two newest records, the one that came out last October and the one that came out the year beforehand, those ones I had complete control on, like what I played on it. Garrick would you know, give suggestions like, in this part I want something kind of like this, or I'm hearing something like that. And if it worked, great. And everything else was kind of left up to me to interpret myself. And if I didn't get any notes on it, I figured it was fine. So, new material I get to kind of do my thing with, but Garrick does most of the writing, and I don't think the band could function any other way. I think it'd be a situation when you got five people in a band, and three of them are singers, and, you know, it's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so...
You need that one chef who's going to direct everybody.
Right, and that's the thing. And Garrick is so insanely creative. Like, if you just go back and read the lyrics to some of these ridiculous songs, and they are ridiculous songs.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, Headless Head Pop and Cockroach Coffee and all this stuff. It's like, where does he come up with this from? What planet is this dude's brain on? But some of it is so creative. Things that I could never think of. Even the way he structures, like, some of the backup vocals with the girls and stuff like that, of the parts they sing versus the parts he sing. I am not talented enough to come up with those ideas and be that creative with it. And he does such a great job with it. So it's like, if he's going to just send me a demo, like, I'm totally fine with that. That's great, you know?
Yeah. And what great songs and what great music that he puts together, but that you help put together with the drumming, and everybody else puts together with their voice, their guitar, their bass, whatever. It's a really good combination, and it's not every day you get a great horror rock group who's not only celebrates the horror film genre, but also honors comedy at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I...
Because this is a group that Beetlejuice would be part of, you know?
Absolutely. And when I... when I try to describe it to people, too, they're like, well, what kind of music is it? Because they'll see the photos, And they'll instantly think like we're some sort of like death metal band because we're all in the makeup and shit.
Yeah,
and it's
that's
like
true.
No,
that's
it's like Kiss and it meets Scooby Doo. Like it, you know what I mean? Like honestly, like it's kind of like it has the same kind of dynamics as like the B-52s, where it's just fun, upbeat kind of party music with a male singer and two female singers, just like the B-52s. We're dressed like Kiss, and all the songs are like a Scooby-Doo mystery. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
well, Gene Keith, I never thought of
right?
it like that.
That's the best way I can do it. And like, Kiss meets Scooby-Doo. That's the only way to do it. Like, we could easily go on the road and like open for Ozzy just as well as we could play a 10-year-old's birthday party. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You can do both.
We wouldn't have to change one thing about the show or the lyrics or nothing. We could do both.
So, Nick, what are your plans for this year in NAMM? What are you up to besides enjoying yourself?
Today, today I'm doing a lot of this, actually. You guys are my second interview of the day, and I'm booked every hour on the hour until the end of the show today. So today is press day. I haven't even been in the convention center yet.
Ooh.
I have not seen anything but the lobby of the Hilton for the last 2.5 hours.
Well, let us apologize for keeping you.
No. I'm totally fine with it. I'm not complaining at all. I'm fine with this. Tomorrow, I will be running around a little bit. I'm performing twice at Gibson Guitars. I'm performing at 2:30 on their main stage, and then they have an acoustic lounge immediately across the hall from their main booth, and I will be performing at 3:30 on the acoustic stage. I'm doing both of those with an artist named Polly Long, kind of Americana, blues, soul music. It's a full band on the main stage, and then it's just going to be me and him acoustic on the side stage. So we're doing that tomorrow afternoon, and then after that I'm stacked with interviews again until 6 o'clock. And then Sunday will be a much more chill day. I actually only have one thing booked, and so I'll get to go around the convention floor a little bit. But Sunday I'm going to be here back at the Hilton again, upstairs in one of the ballrooms doing a panel discussion. And the seminar is mainly about artist relations. It is focusing on how to structure a relationship where that can be mutually beneficial between artists and the brands they endorse.
That's really good.
Yeah, we did a similar one last year that was a huge success. And my buddy Justin Amore from, he's a bass player for 11 to 38, he put the whole thing together and he moderates the panel. And then last year was myself and reps from GraphTech Guitar Labs and GHS Strings that did the discussion. This year it's going to be the same crew. So we're all four of us will be there again, but we're adding Nikki Stevens to the mix too, and she does does a lot with the Fender Music Foundation and Fender Music Education stuff like that.
And she used to be a bass player for Paradise Kitty, right, Nikki Stevens?
I think so.
Yeah, I think I know her.
Yeah.
Nikki Nacho is on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's her. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, purple hair or
yes.
whatever
yes.
hairstyle
yeah, yeah, yeah.
is.
Whatever now. Color it's going to happen to be. So yeah. She's going to be in on the panel this year with us, too. Last year was awesome. We like had the big California Grand Ballroom upstairs, and like I walked in, I was like, there's gonna be like three people, and this room's gonna be empty. And it was standing room only. Like it filled up, and we did our thing for an hour, and then we went to a separate conference room and did a Q&A that was supposed to be like 30 minutes long, and it was like an hour and 30 minutes long. So this year will probably be the same. We'll be in a nice big conference room. We'll do our hour-long discussion, and then maybe some Q&A stuff afterwards. So that's Sunday. So it's kind of a stacked weekend so far, which is good.
That's good. And, you know, speaking of stacked weekends, earlier before we got started, you were telling me you booked a hotel to come here, and they wouldn't honor the price that you paid for online. Can you please tell
so
them
can I just
about
say,
that?
Like, I don't. Where is this going to be? Like, can I use profanity, or is the FCC going to
no,
slap you? Okay,
we don't
so
give a fuck about
I just have
the
to say, fuck Motel 6. That's all I'm going to say right there publicly for the whole world to hear. Fuck Motel 6.
Well, we're Ramada Inn people, so we're good.
Good. Go to the Ramada Inn. They're much nicer there. So I had my rooms booked well in advance, and I don't usually stay like right close to the convention center because the prices are too high. So what I'll do is I'll book like a shitty little rinky-dink motel, like a fucking shitty Motel 6, somewhere like 15-20 minutes away from here. Like, still on like the same street, but just, you know, a couple, 4 or 5 miles down the road.
Sure.
And the prices are drastically less, usually. And that's been my game for years, is do that and just drive in, or take an Uber or something like that. Saves so much money and time, and it's just easy. Well, apparently the reservation that I booked online however long ago, they refused to honor it.
Oh.
So this morning, I'm at the hotel. Like, I stayed there last night. Everything was fine. And then this morning, there was an issue. There was a problem, which led to several phone calls to several different customer support lines with several different supervisors. And the end result was, we're checking you out of the hotel. You can go stay somewhere else. And that's exactly what they said to me.
Wow.
I basically got kicked out of a Motel 6 because they wouldn't honor the price that I booked the hotel at online.
That's unbelievable.
Instead, they were trying to charge me way more per night than what was on my receipt and my reservation.
Well, let me ask you this. When they told you you can go somewhere else, were they at least courteous about it? Or were they just like, you can go somewhere else?
It wasn't that drastically rude, but it still wasn't like polite either. It was kind of in the middle, like where I was standing at the desk, like, did you really just tell me to leave? Like, are you serious? Like, I have to go get all my stuff out of my room now? Like, yeah, it was a little messed up.
So basically they're just telling you, get out of here, but in the nicest way they know how.
Right, right. Exactly. And I'm like, you really, like, all right, well, now you just have a vacant room for the next couple of nights that you did already have money for originally, you know? So you'd rather lose customers than just bite the bullet and say, our bad, we screwed something up. You know what I mean?
Well, that's hotels for you, especially during conventions. They feel like when you find out what's going on, they'll figure out a way to increase it and say, oh, no, it's only for this thing, and they'll just find a loophole.
Yeah, it was so weird, because even the customer support people that I was on the phone with all morning were like, oh, no, we see your reservation right here. Yeah, this many nights at this price, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, that's correct. And they're like, so what's the problem? I'm like, they won't honor that price. They're trying to charge me more. Well, that's something they have to do there. Like, I just kept getting the runaround until they were finally like, we're checking you out of the hotel.
Well, I'm sorry I went through that. Hopefully you'll get that situated somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I'll find something. It's. I'm not going to stress over it. I'm not going to let it ruin my day. So I'll figure it all out.
Well, positive thinking, especially at this time, time of year.
Yeah.
For this convention, that's always a good thing.
I'm sure there is, and I'm sure I'll run into somebody today who's going to be like, hey, man, where are you staying? Like...
All right, we got a couple more questions.
Cool.
I know you got more.
Fire away. Oh, no, I got time.
In terms of drumming for the rest of the year, what are your plans? Is Rhythm Coffin going to go on the road again? Are you going to do some session work? What's up with Nick Bass? The Living Dead drummer, not the Pink Floyd drummer.
Right, right. Clarify. I don't know what that guy's doing.
Collecting royalty checks?
Yeah, maybe. There's a lot going on this year. Actually, Rhythm Coffin does have some stuff coming up. We just booked our first one of the year. We took the holidays off. We always do a big, giant, huge blowout Christmas party. After that, in December, we kind of lay low. So next month, actually, the Rhythm Coffin will be back on stage. And then we got a couple of things already planned for later in the year, but we'll probably stack more to the front end of that. So there'll be stuff throughout the whole year. I have a number of gigs booked with a punk band from way out in the high desert area. I've got like 3 or 4 shows with them right now. They're called Sticky Doll. They've been around for a while too. But they just hired me to do a handful of shows with them. There's some session stuff coming up. I just started doing... I used to always have to just go to a studio to do recording sessions for people, but I started doing some stuff at my own place now, which makes it a lot easier because I can just email you a drum track. So I've got some of that stuff coming up, and I know I got a drum session with a band called Flake that I've been playing with on and off for the last few years. We are finishing up more of their new record next month as well, and also doing some show. The singer lives in South Carolina, so he's flying in. We're going to do a couple of gigs out here when he flies in for the recording stuff. Trying to think. I mean, I got two or three nights booked every week next month alone. I'm just trying to keep it all straight. And then beyond that, I'll probably be on the road more a little bit later this year, too.
So it looks like you got yourself a full plate for this year.
Trying to. So far, it looks good. Like, it's a little, after March, it's a little spaced out, but that never lasts very long. Usually, it's like, I'll look at my calendar and be like, oh, shit, I got, like, a week or two of, like, nothing going on, and then I'll get, like, 8 phone calls in one day. I'm like, well, there goes that. So
much for, like, catching up on your favorite shows on Netflix.
Exactly. You know? That's kind of what happened with January, where it was, like, right up until Christmas, I was like, January's going to be kind of light. I got the NAMM show thing. All right, I'll be able to get some other stuff done, and you know. And then right after Christmas, it was like, oh, no. January's done, February's done, March is getting full, uh-oh. But, again, I'm not complaining. Like, I'm very fortunate to have all that work going on right now. So, you know, get it while it's good.
And we're glad that you're fortunate to have that.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so my last question, and this is an important one I always ask of my guests. So are you ready for this one?
Yes.
Because this will determine if I will like you down the line.
Uh-oh.
I know. Right, Matt?
You can be a hard ass with this one.
Okay.
I can be. So, you ready?
Is it favorite Disney character because we're in Disney? No, I'm kidding.
How'd you know?
Because that's usually the curveball.
What is your favorite Disney character?
Oh, man, I don't know. See, here's the thing.
Okay, how about your favorite recent
Disney character? Honestly, you can't honestly answer that because they bought so much up. You can name anything right now, and Disney owns it, so.
You can name, like, Freddie Mercury from Bohemian Rhapsody because Disney now owns Fox.
That's exactly my point right there. So I don't even think you can answer that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's your question, Simon?
Please, Disney, don't sue me for saying that.
But if you own Motel 6, I am coming for you. Coming for you, mouse.
Oh, wow.
Right,
okay,
anyway,
so my last question is, who did you prefer listening to growing up? The Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Oh, man. That is a tough question.
The reason I ask it is because there's always that, because those were the two bands that really started the whole rock and roll revolution for us. And they're all different styles, different writing, different playing, but they always had the fans divided up. In a way, but they also have fans who love them both for their uniqueness. But I always just wonder, like, what an artist, like, grew up on, and they kind of shaped them in a way.
Okay. So, that's a good question, man. I like that. I probably... Alright, as a young kid... And I mean, too young to make decisions for yourself kind of age, you know?
Sure.
I probably listened to the Beatles more. And I just seem to kind of remember that my alarm clock in my bedroom I was, like, preset to, like, an oldies station for some reason. I think I like the morning comedy show that was on... But because it was an oldie station, amongst that morning comedy show that they did, they would throw a lot of classic rock stuff in there too. And as a result, it was a lot of like early Beatles stuff, like their pop era stuff, not when they did a lot of drugs and got trippy and did Sgt. Pepper, which I like that stuff better from the Beatles.
Same here. I like the I like the later stuff more because they got super creative.
No, I agree with you there. I like the later stuff better too. But as a young kid, like I said, too young to make decisions for yourself, I probably heard more of their early stuff than I did their later stuff or even Rolling Stone stuff. Now, as I grew and got older and matured and started playing music and stuff like that, I definitely, my taste with the British rock thing definitely switched. I started gravitating more towards the later Beatles catalog, but I also really started appreciating the Rolling Stones more. I'd have to say I was more of a Stones guy. When it, like, if I had to, like, gun to my head, choose, listen to the Beatles or listen to the Rolling Stones, I would probably take the Rolling Stones. They were edgier. They were harder. They still, at age 98 years old, personify what a fucking rock star is. Mick Jagger, didn't he just become like a father, like, in the last couple of years? He's like 75 and he's got a kid, like a new kid.
I mean, Keith Richards knew when to snip it.
Right, I'm just saying, they are definitely way more rock and roll, as whereas, like, you listen to Paul McCartney's stuff from the last 20 years or so, and not to take anything away from him, because he's like a genius when it comes to music, but it's a little more dad rock. And the Stones I can get behind more because they are much edgier. If you're going to get in a bar fight, I definitely want Mick Jagger and Keith Richards to have my back more than I want Ringo and Paul to have my back. Does that make sense?
Yeah, if I'm in a
If anyone in those two bands is packing, it's definitely somebody in the Stones, you know? And I'm fortunate enough to say I got to see the Rolling Stones live a bunch of years ago in the early 2000s, and it was absolutely spectacular.
He and I have yet to see them.
So I have the best way of seeing them, too. It was a concert in Canada, and there was the SARS epidemic going on in a couple of different countries, and it hit Canada pretty hard. And the Stones really loved Toronto for some reason. That was their jam. They loved that city. So in an effort to bring business and people and culture back to that city, because everyone was leaving because of the disease, they threw a day-long festival on an airfield. And it was like $16. Like, I still have my ticket stub. It was $16. And here's the headliners. Ready for this? And, like, it was an all-day music festival hosted by Dan Aykroyd. And it was like the best of the best of the best of the best. But here's the headliners: Justin Timberlake, Rush, AC/DC, and the Rolling Stones.
Oh my
damn.
God.
$16. So me and all my friends...
Well, you take Justin Timberlake out of there and you got a great...
Here's the thing. I love Justin Timberlake. I think he's incredibly talented. I love his music. But this was at the wrong time. This was the early 2000s. This was like his first solo break away from the boy band. So he was still... He was still associated with the boy band stuff. So no one took him serious. He was at the wrong concert. People threw bottles at him. He did three songs and had to leave the stage. But if you fast forward like 5 years, oh my God, those same people would be like, hell yeah, I'm going to see Justin Timberlake, because his second record was massive and it was so damn good. So I felt bad for him. But like Rush, AC/DC, and the Rolling Stones as your triple bill headliner, each of them playing for like an hour, hour and a half or longer. And like, I was in the front row, and me and all my friends, we bought tickets. We stayed the entire weekend in Canada, got a hotel room. Public transportation was free that night, so after the concert, you could just jump in a cab or on a bus and go back to your hotel room, and it was free.
Wow.
It was one of the greatest concerts I've ever been to in my life. It was so badass.
That sounds like an amazing show.
Oh my God.
And those reasons you gave for the Stones, that's why I go with the Stones too. Plus, I loved how they would blend their blues rock they were known for with like other genres like R&B, reggae, jazz, a little bit of pop. They would blend those together with the blues, and it just came out heavy. It was genius.
It's so funny, for some random stupid reason this morning when I was like brushing my teeth in the hotel before I got kicked out, I had Honky Tonk Woman stuck in my head. I wasn't even listening to music, nothing, but I'm like brushing my teeth going, And I'm like, wait, where did that come from? Jesus, I didn't hear that song recently.
Well, for me, so, it'd be the song Get Off of My Cloud.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's
great. I like that. Hey, hey, you, off of my cloud. I'm like,
I love it.
That's a great song.
I mean, Sympathy for the Devil is so great, too.
Yeah. My grandfather, who's a pastor today, he actually opened up for the Stones in the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a singer-songwriter, and it was during those three-a-day shows, you know, like they did at the county fairs and whatever. Well, he opened for them, and he would wear a new suit each time. He was a singer-songwriter, like kind of like Frank Sinatra, but more Christian-oriented. And every time, and he was looking dapper, looking fresh, and every time he passed the Rolling Stones, they're wearing the same thing. It's a hot day. And they are stinking up the joint. So last day, he's got a brand new suit on. He does his thing. He gets off, and he notices that they smell. They're wearing the same shit over and over. So then their manager goes up to them and says, "Hey guys, we could complain about your clothes, and you guys are smelling right now. Would you mind like just changing outfits before you go out there?" And they're like, "Oh sure, no problem." So they do that, and when they go out there, I shit you not, my grandfather can attest to this. They just switched with each other's outfits.
Oh my god. That's so good. That's so good.
It was the 60s, and that was probably as rock and roll as you could get.
The ultimate fuck you. The ultimate middle finger.
Well, it was mostly to the promoters and to the manager.
That's so funny. Oh my god, I love it. See, that's why right there. That's why they coined the phrase
sex, drugs,
and rock
and
roll. If somebody was going to have your back in a bar fight, I would definitely take the Stones on that one.
I would take the Stones, but I would also have Motley Crue as my bodyguards.
Yeah, although that's kind of a coin toss, because while you think that they would be ready to scrap, they might not be around, too, because they're too busy fucking somebody's wife in the dressing room or doing drugs in the bathroom. Like, you might not find them when you need them. They might not be there.
That's a golden rule with Motley Crue. Don't bring your girlfriend, because they will fuck her.
Right, so you honestly, with them as your bodyguard, it's a coin toss. It could be the best muscle you ever had, or it could be where the fuck are they when you need them.
Well, think about this, though. The Stones could be the same way, too. They were notorious for it.
That's true. That's true. I think at this stage of their life, maybe they'd have your back a little bit more, though.
Probably.
I think maybe.
Well, hey, Nick, we had an excellent time getting to know you, getting to know the Living Dead drummer. And we look forward to seeing you again with Riven Coffin when they come to town.
Thank you very much. Yeah, February. Need to check my calendar. February something. Check my calendar online. Ooh, plug. I can do a plug now. Right, livingdeaddrummer.com. And that has all of my up-to-date appearances and stuff like that. So whatever day the Rhythm Coffin is playing next month, it's on my website.
Well, then, there you go. You got your plug in. Well, Nick, you enjoy yourself the rest of the time. You know, try to get through your interviews with grace and style. And just do what you did with us. Just have fun and just be yourself with it, you know?
I will. And I'm glad we bonded over the Rolling Stones. It's a shame Disney owns them now. So.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure they would just give the middle finger to Bob Iger whenever they want to. Bob Iger would be like, okay, you're the Stones, you can do what you want.
Could be. I don't know. Like, everybody's trying to cash in on that mouse's bank account right now, so.
Well, you know what? Their movies are the shit right now.
That's right. They're batting 1,000 on everything, so they're doing good.
Yeah, they are. Well, Nick, enjoy NAMM, and we will see you hopefully in February, whenever that might be.
Thank you very much, and thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.